Hey everyone, this is Andy, better known as Love Retro BTW on Twitter, X, Threads, IG, and Cafe BTW on TikTok and YouTube. A quick update that the Cafe BTW podcast is taking a very long hiatus, but I still have something really amazing to share with you. We have a fantastic retro gaming community on Twitter X, where we've crossed well over 2,000 passionate members. And if you're a lover of retro gaming, this is the perfect place to share your content, showcase your pickups, or just chat about your favorite old school games. To dive into nostalgia and become a part of the thriving community, click in the show notes on the Cafe BTW link tree or go right to my Twitter X profile on Love Retro BTW. And now, without further ado, gear up for another sensational episode of the Gamers Week Podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week Podcast.
Interestingly, while this means that Steam is now more open to games developed with AI-generated content, the platform has one notable exception. Valve states that it currently won't allow adults-only sexual content created with live-generated AI.
The one part of AI I really liked, they're going to ban.
Well, you don't want them to create a representation of you, Ryan?
There are exceptions.
Okay. Now we're putting in exceptions now that it involves you. Okay.
Yeah, suddenly there was Ryan, there was hentai, there was tentacles, it was a whole thing.
Actually, now I'm fine with that.
Why the hell were you up at 4 a.m.?
I woke up. I could not get back to sleep. So I went downstairs and I started watching. There was nothing on TV at the time. I subscribed to Hulu Live TV and there was nothing.
Not even like the Extends commercial, like
infomercial? Nothing worth watching.
Oh, come on. That's worth watching.
Yeah. Those were very entertaining. Come on.
This is Bob. Bob has a problem with getting a boner. But I started watching music videos. And the very first music video was Technotronic's Pump Up the Jam.
Nice.
A good song in theory, but it's not the kind of video that I wanted to wake up to because that thing is seizure inducing. It's like they'll change to a different scene every 2 or 3 seconds. And it's all the different colors going around. And I'm like, this is too bright, too early. And but did I end up watching the whole? Yeah, I watched the whole thing.
That's when you pop a weed gummy and hope it kicks in when it comes back around.
I was going to say, if it's too bright, you're too old.
That's right. It would not have been too bright at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon or hell, even 10 o'clock at night. But 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm putting my foot down.
You're supposed to still be up at 4 a.m. when you watch that video.
That's right.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, the worst, and the weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 105, and today is Wednesday, January 10th, 2024. And my name is Ryan, aka Retro Game Brews, and I will be your fine, fantastic host for this evening. But I am not alone. I have two excellent co-hosts with me. The first of which is a podcast sleuth with a PhD in digging up dirt. Whether it's Forgotten Promises or some embarrassing thing you said once, she has the receipts. Armed with a mic and an unapologetic attitude, she fearlessly explores the tales of truth and leaves no questionable decision forgotten. Blue Williams. Blue, how you doing today?
Good, thank you. And I'm writing that introduction down for next time.
Receipts on receipts, baby.
Yep.
So whenever you apply for a job, is that when they say like what are your skills? You can just say I keep receipts. And they're like, oh.
Yes, I brought the Trapper Keeper for reference.
And our next co-host is self-proclaimed champion of chickens. His idea of an acceptable horror game is Minesweeper on expert mode. The mere mention of angry innkeepers makes him break into a cold sweat. And his gaming strategy involves closing his eyes and hoping for the best. Donnie G, how you doing today?
I love horror games. And I'm so sorry. You guys both got scared on the little girl on At Dead of Night. And I completely missed her. I went back and watched a little of the VOD and I was like, holy crap, she was like standing right there in front of you, clear as day, and I missed it.
So what that means is that in a real life horror movie situation, Donnie is the first to go because he just didn't notice the murderous ghost.
Well, this past Monday, as you probably figured out based off of our conversations, we celebrated a 2-year anniversary of Gamers Week with a live Twitch stream when Donnie played the spoopy game At Dead of Night. If you weren't able to make it, you can always check out the VOD. Here's a quick taste of the shenanigans.
Jesus. Okay.
It's a good thing you went to the dead end of the hallway.
I wanted to go to the elevator.
Hashtag Donnie is the dumb blonde.
Oh, God. Oh, shit. Oh, no, go. No. Hey.
How is that hiding?
Oh, shit. Just, oh, shit.
I guess he doesn't see you.
I was getting ready to go out.
Don't breathe.
Occupied. Yeah, he just walked the opposite way.
I'm going to walk right into him. Jesus Christ.
You were right. I told you not to leave. And you did anyway.
No, I clicked on the menu. It said, wait until you're safe first.
This is my f***ing heart. This is why I don't like scary movies.
That was so fun.
Oh, that was a great, great game to stream. I can't wait for you guys to stream it as well.
The fact that I didn't have control over it and you did, made it even scarier, I think, for me.
Especially when he was making all the wrong decisions.
Right. Like, he just opened the door when it said, stay in here until you're safe. Or like he would, Jimmy would go to the right and then Donnie would go out and go to the right.
I don't know why the game did this. Like, as soon as I go out of a door, it immediately turned around and faced the door.
Right.
Like, yeah, it was a 180. So when Jimmy went right, you had to also go right because it was left. So it was confusing. I'll give him that. But
right. Thank you.
Yeah. You did walk right into Jimmy a couple times.
And the funny part is we didn't find anything.
No, not one of the base objective of the game. We didn't find one.
And it's funny because you saved the game and I'm thinking to myself, like, who cares? We didn't find it.
Might as well start over.
Right.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and jump into our reviews, reactions, and requests for this week, starting with Duct Tape Play says, I share my birthday with Gamers Week, eh? Happy birthday, podcast. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Duct Tape.
Happy birthday.
At Dad's Game Review says, congrats on the 2 years. I hope we can be as entertaining as you guys. Aw, thank you.
It's pretty easy. All you need to do is make fart jokes and sing badly.
We do have a self-help book that is available for $49.95.
And last up is Terry Bacchae said, I'll never forget the first time I listened to the podcast. I think there were about 3 episodes and I was sitting in a Walmart parking lot waiting for groceries to get delivered, having just had my wife and kids test positive for COVID for the first time. The wait took like an hour, but y'all kept me very amused, which is a long way of saying congrats on 2 years.
Aww. Aww. Thanks, Terry.
Thanks, Thank Terry. You.
I love that story. And now it's time for the
Where am I?
That's not creepy at all.
No, not at all.
No heed. He is cute. but he is insane.
In an insane world, it is the sane who is called crazy.
What the? Okay, but really, where are we?
We are inside the very important pole.
Inside the pole? But that's impossible.
The irrationality of a thing is no argument against its existence, but rather a condition of it.
I'm afraid it is possible. Yeah. Every choice that has ever been part of the very important pole remains trapped inside the pole in limbo.
So then who is that?
That is Other. He has been here the longest because he's always the fourth choice in the pole.
To live is to suffer. To hope is to prolong the suffering.
Please, we are depressed enough.
There's gotta be a way out of here. I don't deserve to be here.
The most common lie is that which one lies to himself.
Shut up. Shut up. Shut up.
Hello, prisoners. Gamers Week has graciously decided to purge the pole dungeons. You're invited up to the first very important pole of the year.
Yay!
Where you will all be ritualistically sacrificed to the Twitter gods so that Gamers Week will get more downloads this year.
No. Mario!
This is a happy ending. Kinda makes you want to listen to more gaming podcasts, right?
Love it.
Very well done. Was that the star from the Mario Brothers movie?
It was.
Okay.
So good.
You guys were like, oh my God, you'd love that character. So I went on YouTube and looked up that scene. I was like, I need to make a poll of this. All right. Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP. That is our very important poll. And if you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. So the question for this week, in honor of World Nerd Day this past Tuesday, what's the best part of being a nerd? Coming in third place, we have having nerdy friends with 13.1%. And for only the third time in Gamers Week history, we have another tie. Tied for first place, we have having fun passions and being your true self, both with 39.3% of the votes. We also had 8.4% of people vote other. So let's look at some of the comments from the poll. At PixelPond _ said, meeting your best friends of your whole life because nerds know how to use social media and computers to connect interests.
Preach!
At Mogak says, knowing that if someone doesn't share your passions, you will never be asked about them again. At Sleep is for Tea said, all of them. But to pick just one, it's got to be having nerdy friends. Maybe because some of us felt outcast for our interests when we were younger, but having friends to do nerd stuff, make nerd jokes, and just talk nerdy to you when you need it, the best. At Samson 7.1 says, pure pursuit of passion. When social awkwardness is a foregone conclusion, you no longer have to waste energy on self-consciousness. You don't need to be your ideal self or your true self because self was just in the way of your passion anyway. That's deep.
That was.
And at the LP Princess said, wait, what is World Nerd Day? Nobody sent me a memo. We need to get LP Princess on the mailing list.
Apparently.
So how did you guys vote in the poll, Donnie?
Being your true self, liking what you like, and knowing that there are just millions of droves of people out there that share those same interests with you, whether it be movies, music, video games, board games, or sitting alone on a Saturday night painting a little miniature figure by yourself. That's nerdy, and I love it. Everything nerdy, I love. And it's being my true self. That's what I chose.
Very nice. What about you, Ryan?
I'm going to say probably being your true self as well. Being a nerd growing up was sometimes tumultuous, right? It's not always the easiest thing to still be yourself when there's a lot of social pressure around you, especially when you're growing up. But when you get to a point in your life where you just don't care anymore and you can finally be that person that you really want to be and find friends and people that connect with you on that, that's huge.
Yes.
You know? And for me too, it's the age in which we live in now, there's so much access to information and cool stuff that wasn't available when I was a kid. And now I can go on YouTube and just go down the rabbit hole of nerdy stuff. And I feel like I know more now than I could ever possibly have known back then. So it's something about recognizing what your passions are and not caring what other people think. And as a result, I think that's me. Being my true self. And then as a result of that passion, I get to talk to you three, or you two. I talk to myself. Talk to you two twice a week. So that definitely worked out for me. That's for sure.
Nice.
Very nice. Blue, what about you?
I went with having nerdy friends. I feel like we're all coming to the same conclusion, but going at it different ways. Mm-hmm. So growing up, being a nerd was not cool. I didn't know anybody else that shared my passions. When I was younger, you know, some of my friends would play video games much more casually than I was interested in. And as we got older, like they quote unquote grew out of video games, but I didn't. And I felt like such a weirdo. Mm-hmm. And so now that we live in the internet age and the pool of available friends is essentially expanded to the entire world, I see that I am in no way alone because there's so many people out there. And if I didn't have access to the internet that we do now, I might have gone my whole life thinking that I was alone. So being able to connect with like-minded people with like interests and just have fun together talking about nerdy stuff, that has been awesome. And to me, that is hands down the best part of being a nerd.
Hear, hear.
I'm a nerd and I'm pretty proud of it. All right. So why don't we go ahead and shout out our patrons?
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. Gametroid, Mora Deeb, Michael LeKite, Emo Esk, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, Fruitcakes Pickled Pepper, Ducks with Thick Thighs, Wizard of Zardoz, Bobson Dugnut, Loud Moth, Retro Blast Pat, Great Cyanman 81, BNT Zilligai, The Mad Milkman, Seven Castle Forest, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnair, Doongie Forever, Ducks in Disguise, Don't Make Me Pull Over This Car, Games with Coffee, Hybrid Divide, Matto1606, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, The Red Ox PDX Family, including Shannon and Luke, Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Boys Fan, Sassy Sony, Evil Lust, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, and Mega Retro Man. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more. And also, we want to give a big congratulations to Zach Huge Thanks. Or are we giving him a huge congratulations? On the launch of his new podcast, check out Absolutely the Best Podcast, a work in progress, on Apple Podcasts, where Zach and his co-host, George, are doing a deep dive into the MCU movies.
This is not the greatest podcast in the world. No.
I hope that's their theme song.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and jump into our headlines for the week. Our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic, family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. The podcast is currently on a short break, but there are 5 seasons worth of episodes ready to pleasure your ear holes. Such as Season 4, Episode 3, where the guys cover Bonk Adventures, Doom 64, and Ms. Pac-Man's 40th anniversary. Visit them at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes. So I got to say, Ms. Pac-Man is everything you want on a Pac-Man, but done right. It's not slow. It's easier to maneuver as a result of it. I think the ghosts are easier to evade. And at the end of the day, Pac-Man, once you play Ms. Pac-Man, you can't go back to regular Pac-Man because it just feels so sluggish.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
And plus, there's a story.
And she's cute. She's got a bow and she swallows.
Oh, hi-oh. Well, hey, Pac-Man does too. So maybe that's why they're made for each other.
All right, from Games Radar. Steam changes stance on AI-generated content in games. Valve has issued new rules on how Steam will approach AI content, seemingly changing the platform's previous stance. Generative AI has been a divisive area within the gaming industry, partly fueled by studios utilizing AI for art, writing, and other content generation processes. Steam's latest update on its rules for AI content might widen this debate further about where the industry is headed with the technology. Back in June 2023, users claimed that Steam was banning games that ship with AI-generated content. In response, Valve clarified its stance on AI content, stating that the company doesn't wish to discourage using AI tools in game development and that it was working to integrate it into existing review policies. Valve further pointed out that any ban on such content was a reflection of current copyright law and policies rather than an indication of the company's opinions. Now, Steam appears to have changed its stance on AI-generated content following its latest update. Developers are now required to disclose if their games use pre-generated content like art, code, or audio via AI. As part of the Steam distribution agreement, developers also promise that this AI-generated content isn't illegal or infringing. Additionally, this disclosure applies to live-generated AI content as well. Here, developers would need to specify the guardrails put in place to ensure the game doesn't generate illegal content on Steam. Interestingly, while this means that Steam is now more open to games developed with AI-generated content, the platform has one notable exception. Valve states that it currently won't allow adults-only sexual content created with live-generated AI. Nevertheless, the company points out that it will continue to explore the area, particularly in the legal process around AI, and will revisit this decision when necessary. As of now, the gaming industry is split on what role generative AI plays in games. While some companies are opting to go all in on AI, a significant chunk of the sector has expressed concerns about how the technology could upend existing jobs and harm the outlook of games overall.
The one part of AI I really liked, they're going to ban.
Well, you don't want them to create a representation of you, Ryan?
There are exceptions.
Oh, okay. Now we're putting in exceptions now that it involves you. Okay.
Yeah, suddenly there was Ryan, there was hentai, there was tentacles. It was a whole thing.
Actually, now I'm fine with that.
So, doesn't wish to discourage using AI tools in game development, because honestly, that's where it's going.
One of the things I will say is that probably 90-95% of the games that are uploaded to Steam are indie developers, people who are doing this as a passion project for themselves, not expecting to make sales. I think back in the day, we had seen that like 80% of all Steam games have never been purchased or played.
Oh, that's depressing.
Right. Because, I mean, there's millions of games out there. People just, you know, create a game, upload it, and see if it catches fire. But honestly, I'm okay if you're an indie developer utilizing AI just to help you, because let's be honest, if you're an indie developer, there's more than likely you have a 9-to-5 job, right? And you're doing this again as a passion project. I don't mind that. When it gets into the things you were talking about, Donnie, where it's AI generated art, for one. Because often AI is essentially stealing from all the available content.
Absolutely.
Often or always?
Always, right. But again, if you're an indie developer and you're just somebody who wants cool sounds in your game and you just don't know how to do voices yourself and you don't have the budget to pay for somebody else, it's not concerning to me.
AI at its best being integrated into video games, that is what its proponents say it's meant to do. It's meant to lower the barrier to entry so that people who maybe have gaps in their skill set can still go ahead and create the game of their dream, whether that's AI helping them code or if you're all by yourself and you can't possibly do all the voices. So I'm just going to, you know, throw a couple of AI voices in there, call it good, and you can get your game out. And like you said, considering that 80% or so of games on Steam have never been bought whatsoever, what's the harm in it? But like, I think what has happened here is Steam initially pumped the brakes on it because, I mean, they say they were concerned about lawsuits, which I totally get, because all you need is some big time lawsuit looping Steam in and the platform takes an enormous hit for a, let's say, what's most likely a nothing game that wasn't earning them any money anyway. And they don't need that. And while AI is so new that the laws around it are still kind of the Wild West still. Right. Better be safe than sorry. But what they also realized is that they have the potential to make so much more money by allowing these types of games. And as the gaming industry moves, like Donnie said, further and further and further into being AI dependent when making games, if they were to continue to ban that type of content, the Steam library would take an enormous hit moving forward. So they were not going to do that. And as quickly as possible, they say, we need to find a way to live with this technology.
You say the term AI dependent. I don't believe that statement can coexist in the video game industry. It shouldn't have to exist in the video game industry. We've been non-dependent on AI for decades. There's no reason why now we should automatically have to adopt we're dependent on AI mindset in the video game industry. And I think the only reason why that's a mindset is because of the big studios, right? The big box studios, the AAA developers and whatnot that, you know, they can afford to spend all of this money paying their employees, but they choose not to because they are so greedy. They want all of that money for themselves and they want to, okay, let's use AI to our advantage because now we don't have to have these sprawling teams of developers and coders and artists and all this stuff. We can just punch it into a computer and it takes care of itself.
But one of the things I will say is that Steam, at their core, shouldn't necessarily be the people who determine whether or not games should include AI or not. That's not their business model. That's not what they're in the business of making money to do.
Well, and we also have to remember that this stuff is still incredibly new and everybody's trying to get on top of it. And at least I will give Steam credit for being proactive in this situation. Their plan may not be perfect. At least it's a starting point. And after it's been in effect for a while, they will modify it as needed. Everybody's just kind of working together to figure out how best to deal with this weird technology.
I'm not an AI expert, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express line. Next up from VGC, Netflix is reportedly exploring adding in-game ads to its gaming service.
We have fun news this week.
According to a report in the Wall Street Journal, top Netflix bosses have had discussions about the possibility of integrating advertisements into the streaming giant's limited but growing gaming selection. It's suggested that Netflix would only introduce ads to users who already see ads as part of their subscription, which is the case for users on the lower-priced ad-supported models. Elsewhere in the report, it suggested that Netflix could begin offering larger titles for an additional fee, as opposed to the current model of games being included in one subscription. Netflix's games offering launched in 2021 and will have nearly 90 games by the end of this year, including Grand Theft Auto Trilogy, the Definitive Edition, and Football Manager 24 Mobile.
Yay. Yeah.
You guys are willing to watch ads to play Football Manager 24 Mobile, right?
Absolutely. According to Netflix, it has another nearly 90 games in development, including Braid, Anniversary Edition, Hades, Monument Valley 1 and 2, and Paper Trail. Last year, Netflix also took the first step towards making games playable on TV and computers by rolling out a test in the US, UK, and Canada. By year's end, we'll have 86 games available, all included with every Netflix membership without ads, in-app purchases, or extra fees, wrote Netflix Games VP Mike Verdeux. And with nearly 90 more games in development, we're just getting started. Up until now, Netflix has proudly positioned itself alongside Apple Arcade as a games platform that shunned ads and in-app purchases. The Wall Street Journal did stress that right now these are only internal discussions and are by no means indicative that Netflix will indeed make these changes. It does, however, say that the discussions took place in recent months and cites that the news was leaked by people familiar with the discussions.
I think Mike Verdeux changed his name from Mike Sorrento to Mike Verdeux, as in Sorrento from Ready Player One, where he's going to add 90% of your viewing screen. It's going to be ads before you go into a seizure.
Sorrento.
Also, that was only in the movie.
I'm aware.
I am aware.
I've read the book. Thank you very much.
And yet you keep referencing the movie.
Because I like the movie, okay? Am I allowed to like the movie too?
Yes, but I think less of you for it.
Well, that's not surprising.
So this is kind of strange because the news several months ago was that fewer than 1% of Netflix subscribers actually use the game service.
Right.
So shouldn't you try to make the thing successful first before stuffing it full of ads?
I think they're expecting it to go down in flames. So this is their way to be a stopgap from
recoup some of the money.
Some of the money, right.
Netflix is not the first thing I think of when I think about playing games.
Who wants to watch ads to play ports of games that are several years old?
Right.
On a mobile device.
And I will say recently I'd gotten into poker on my phone, playing mobile poker. And if I have to see another ad for Royal Match, where it's a king that you have to save by doing a, you know, match three game.
Yeah.
I will f***ing lose it. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm anticipating this is going to be like, is that you will constantly get ads like that in which you're just going to sit there, twiddle your thumbs. And even for Royal Match, one of the ads that they go, oh, we have no ads on this, but you put ads on everything else, damn right. It.
Right. Back when there were rumors, however many months ago, that Xbox and Sony were considering adding ads to games, we talked about the difficulty of integrating ads with games, because it's not like you sit down and watch something, like where, for example, TV shows have ad breaks built in. Sports events have media breaks to run ads. Even in movies, like, you can find places to put the ad where it's not that intrusive. But trying to do it in a game, I mean, unless it's something like a match three where you match, beat the level, whatever. Yay, here's your ad. If it's a game like Hades or something, where on earth are you going to put the ad?
Right. Are you going to do it right in the middle of a boss fight?
Right.
Like a Final Fantasy-esque boss fight where I have to put in my super break combo or whatever. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, try extends. And you're like, oh, son.
It definitely tracks your history there, Donnie.
Yeah.
So at what point of their game are they going to show a subscription? Is it going to be right at the beginning of the game? Every time you save a game? At the end of a game?
Every time you die?
Oh, you have died. Here's an ad for this.
You're just fighting the boss. No, 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 no. Don't make me watch the ad again. No!
That's a motivation to become really good at the game, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Don't play this game on hard mode.
So does that mean if a game had an easy mode and you're playing on the easy mode, would they show you longer ads because you saw fewer of them?
Yeah, if you died on easy mode, they're going to send you like a 20-minute ad. It would go back to the old days of commercials on TV when we were younger, when we would have to sit through like 5 minutes of commercials before it got back to your regularly scheduled program, and it showed 10 minutes of the movie.
Right.
And another 5 minutes of ads.
It's going to be one of those ads where they're like, order this now before the government shuts us down. YouTube has those. They have like hour-long ads that come up, and they're like infomercials, or they're like crazy snake oil salesman ads that are 45 minutes long. And occasionally I like to listen to YouTube while I'm in the shower, and I can't skip those. So I have to get out of my shower in order to skip that ad. That is the most annoying thing to me, is humanly possible.
That's what I was thinking, is those ads must be designed for the people who just go so far down the YouTube rabbit hole that they have no idea what's real anymore.
Wait, this is an ad? All right, next up from Read Write, Kardashian mobile game to shut down after players spend millions. Oh my God. Oh, you weren't kidding about these being like the worst articles of all time. A decade after Kim Kardashian launched her mobile game, Kim Kardashian Hollywood, it's been announced that the game is going to shut down, leaving players, some of who have spent thousands of dollars in the game, with nothing to show for their outlay. The microtransaction-laden mobile app was initially ridiculed as nothing more than a publicity stunt, but within a few years of the launch, it has rolled in a cool $160 million in revenue, with Kardashian estimated to have personally taken home some $45 million of that. That was back in 2016, and while no recent numbers have been disclosed, it's safe to say that they are higher now, with players spending a small fortune on the game K-Star's virtual currency. Players logging in last week discovered some of the game's features have been locked, along with a notice from developer Glue stating that the game will be shuttered on April 8th this year. For Kardashian's part, she issued a statement to TMZ saying, "The journey has meant so much to me, but I've realized that it's time to focus that energy into other passions. I will be forever inspired by the community that we built together." But fuck you.
I think you needed to read it again, but in Kim Kardashian's voice.
"This journey has meant so much to me, but I realize it's time to focus that energy on other passions. I will forever be inspired by this community and what we built together."
Bravo.
Thanks for the money, bitches.
No notes.
Game itself was ranked 86th by Polygon in its 100 most important games of the decade. Are you fucking
wow.
Placing it higher than Resident Evil 7 and Super Mario Maker, writing, "This was a decade of mobile games unapologetically tailored towards young women. There was no mention, however, of the incessant microtransactions you needed to make in order to have a modicum of success within the game. One player from Houston said, 'I never spent my own money on the game, but I would ask for K-Stars as gifts from my husband for birthdays,'" so that's your money, "'anniversaries and so on. I'm going to guesstimate it amounted to around $5,000 over time. To be honest, I have no regrets. I don't drink. I don't do drugs." Maybe you should.
Yeah. So this is
brought me pleasure. Glue Mobile describes itself as the leader in 3D freemium mobile gaming. Freemium games offer the base version of the game for free, and then players pay for extra features as they play. In 2021, Glue Mobile was acquired by Electronic Arts. It's creating a new global leader in mobile gaming.
I just can't.
Just I can't, yeah. I cannot.
I want to completely all over this game. But there really is no difference between this and Call of Duty Warzone, where it's a free-to-play game, and you can go in and buy skins and all this other stuff. So it's,
I don't know if there's no difference.
there's some difference. At least with Call of Duty Warzone, you can play and you can win without spending a dime. And it sounds like that's not the case. These kind of mobile games are more often than not pay-to-win stuff.
So do I have permission to shit all over this game then?
I'll do it for you.
Okay. Permission granted.
Yeah, it is. It's conflicting, right? Because that's part of, you know, what feminism fought for is that women could do what women wanted and what they liked to do. Mm-hmm. And so if women are choosing to give money to this vapid walking piece of plastic surgery, then who am I to tell them that they shouldn't do that? You know, if they want to fund Kim Kardashian's 34th liposuction procedure, that's their right. It's their money. But I do object to the idea that this was a decade of mobile games unapologetically tailored towards young women, because apparently all young women are interested in is funding their rise to popularity by walking the red carpet and wearing nice clothes and just being completely
devoid of anything interesting or personality.
Yeah, just being completely shallow. I get it. Like, this is a diversion. It's fun. It's not meant to be taken seriously. I get that. But to rank it in 86 in the most 100 important games of the decade? I mean, come on. This was not new or innovative or groundbreaking, and this didn't do anything to further society or the industry. This was just a vapid, time-wasting money suck.
There's also a subreddit for Kardashian Hollywood.
Of course there is.
I'm not going to shit on somebody who maybe uses this as a means for entertainment, but the fact that they're being fleeced by somebody who is essentially almost, if not, a billionaire. I mean, she took home $45 million for essentially what she did is she put her name on it. She probably had some influence on the creation of it. But at the end of the day, I doubt she had a lot of influence on what the game does or how it works.
Right. Where she's trying to focus that energy into other passions. I'm sure she put a ton of passion into this. I'm sure it's not ending right at this time randomly because some sort of contract ran out or something. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that has nothing to do with it. It's all been a passion project.
She controlled the entire game. She wants to move on to something else now. She's like, "I'm just so bored with this. Like, I the money is kind of falling off. Like last year, I got like $45 million. This year, I only got 32. That is a significant drop, and I cannot just do this with $32 million.
I spent so much time coding this game.
Do you know how hard it is to code with these giant fake nails? Click, 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 click. And I mean, I fully acknowledge that there's a hypocritical side to me criticizing this game, but there is just something about games like this that is just so inherently scummy.
And she said inspired by the community that we built together. Do you think that she played the game a lot?
Do you think she ever interacted with those people?
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. She's like too busy doing other stuff.
Very important stuff.
Come back, Kanye.
All right, let's take a look at our top three new releases for the week.
Well, okay, we got two new releases, but we got new releases. For the first time in a month, we got new releases. So first up is Momodora Moonlit Farewell out on PC. Momodora Moonlit Farewell is the latest installment in the Momodora series. Join Momo, High Priestess of the Village of Koho, as she embarks on a divine mission to save her people from imminent destruction at the hands of the demon hordes summoned by a malevolent bellringer. This side-scrolling platformer features gorgeous pixel art and deep exploration into a world rich with lore and atmosphere. Action-packed gameplay focuses on melee combos and dodging enemy attacks. Freely adjustable difficulty levels allow you to relax and explore the alluring world at your own pace or take on mighty foes for a real challenge. And next up is Crystal Story Dawn of Dusk on PC. Crystal Story Dawn of Dusk is the first entry in the Crystal Story epic and features charming retro-style graphics with fast-paced action and turn-based battles, heavily inspired by 16-bit classics. Traverse a challenging world and defeat enemies while solving puzzles. This hybrid retro-modern style adventure will bring you back to the past, but with a modern twist. Includes an optional CRT filter for nostalgic flair. So out of these two, what are you looking at, Ryan?
Neither of these are must plays for me. I'll say that. But Crystal Story Dawn of Dusk is more where I would lean to 16-bit graphics, turn-based action, optional CRT filter, which I love that because I can put it on if I don't want or if I want to. Sounds fun. Momodora does not sound as interesting to me. I guess it's beautiful looking. Okay. But the one thing I do find interesting is freely adjustable difficulty levels. So in the moment of a game, you're just like, oh, fuck this. I'm not going to, I don't want to face this boss. Rip, down to super easy, back up to hard, down to super easy, back up to hard. Is that what we're talking about here?
Might be.
Because that's awesome.
I was going to say, wow. I'm not going to lie. I have faced a lot of bosses in a lot of games where I'm like, God damn it, I wish I could just hit a button and make this go away.
The beat a game button. So yeah, overall, Crystal Story, Dawn of Dusk. If I picked up either of these games, that would be the one, but probably not going to go for either.
All right. What about you, Donnie?
Interesting. I've taken a look at both of these games, and while I will say that neither of them are like a must pickup, they both do look appealing. Momodora has that platformer, side scroller kind of content that I love. I could see myself playing this, not a day one pickup for me. And then again, Crystal Story Dawn of Dusk. When I'm looking at the review on Steam or the video on Steam, the first thing I see is a callback to the old school Super Nintendo RPG games where you've got the world map and you're above it in some sort of ship or creature and you're flying around it to your next destination. And that immediately hit home with me. I immediately thought of Secret of Mana and Final Fantasy III. And I can't really tell. I mean, it looks like it's got some different kind of scenes where it looks like you're playing on an old Game Boy, and then it looks like you're playing on the SNES. So I would be interested to see how this game played overall. I could go for either one, but definitely not a day one pickup.
Blue, what about you?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of mostly the same. I think both of these games are ones that I could probably play and enjoy. Momodora Moonlit Farewell, it almost has a look, watching the gameplay in the trailer, it almost has a look of like a Metroidvania. And it kind of hints to that, you know, with the side-scrolling platformer exploration, but it doesn't outright say Metroidvania. But I bet That's kind of what it is. And it's a nice looking game, and I bet it's fun. So that's one I would be open to trying. Crystal Story Dawn of Dusk, again, the same, like Donnie was saying, it looks like a throwback to those 16-bit RPGs that we all know and love. And it looks like it might be making all kinds of nods to retro gaming with those Game Boy looking inspired scenes. So while I'm probably not going to run out like you guys, I'm not going to run out and get either of these day one, but they are ones that I kind of want to keep an eye on and see how the reviews turn out, how people like them, and maybe I will end up picking them up.
All right, now it's time for our main topic. CES, the most powerful tech event in the world, kicked off its 2024 event in Las Vegas on January 9th. While CES bills itself as the only trade show that showcases the entire tech landscape at one event.
Are you doing monster trucks?
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
You'll pay for the whole seat, but you only need the edge.
The gaming industry has already been getting its fair share of headlines, so for our main topic tonight, we're looking at a roundup of CES 2024 news.
Okay, first up from GameSpot, SAG-AFTRA approves AI voice acting for video games. Actors Union SAG-AFTRA, which also represents voice actors and mocap performers in the games industry, has announced a groundbreaking agreement with AI voice studio Replica Studios, and many voice actors aren't happy. Many of the industry's top talent have come out to state that they weren't consulted on the deal and don't know anyone who was. The agreement between the leading AI voice company and the world's largest performers union will enable Replica to engage SAG-AFTRA members under a fair, ethical agreement to safely create and license a digital replica of their voice. SAG-AFTRA's official statement reads, the statement says SAG-AFTRA's AI deal was approved by affected members of the union's voiceover performer community, but a number of voice actors have responded on Twitter to criticize the agreement, adding that they were not consulted and don't know any voice actors who were. No one asked me about this. No one reached out for my opinion, said Elias Tufexis, the voice of Adam Jensen in the Deus Ex series. From what I'm seeing, no one asked any of my peers either. Steve Blum replied to SAG-AFTRA's tweet to add, nobody in our community approved this that I know of. Games are the bulk of my livelihood and have been for years. Who are you referring to? The deal with Replica Studios appears to be mostly unrelated to these negotiations and was announced as part of a CES event this week. But people have been quick to call out the union for authorizing AI voice actors when AI was a key issue in last year's extensive film and TV strike. The film and TV agreement doesn't outright ban AI, but requires explicit actor consent for how their digital replicas can be used, and requires studios to notify the union if considering using fully synthesized actors, giving the union a chance to bargain for human actors to be cast instead. Parties acknowledge the importance of human performance in motion pictures and the potential impact on employment, one clause of the agreement states. AI voiceover has already started to appear in major game titles, with free-to-play shooter The Finals seeing criticism for its use of AI voices for its announcers.
So I actually saw some of this on Twitter, I think today or yesterday, where somebody had screen captured a tweet saying, this monumental breakthrough agreement has been signed by SAG-AFTRA and everything. And this actress was saying, well, we have not agreed to anything. We are still in negotiations. So it sounds like somebody made an executive decision without consulting any of the members of SAG-AFTRA. And I think that's an important piece. You need their consent on what can be done with their voices.
I've seen quotes from Fran Drescher, who is... That would be a fun game. Fran Drescher or Peter Griffin? So I've been seeing quotes from Fran Drescher. She's the SAG-AFTRA president, praising this deal, saying, oh, it's going to be so great for actors. It's going to be a way for them to monetize their likeness in a way that is safe, that they control instead of the other companies. But I agree, it is a terrible look that this was such a big deal last year about the dangers of AI, about how it wasn't fair, how it was going to cause irreparable harm to the industry. And now all of a sudden, everybody's changing their tunes because we've signed this agreement with this Replica Studios. A check changed hands somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Money makes you forget all of your problems and worries.
And your ethics.
Yeah, those too, depending on the right price.
So in theory, though, if the actors have to give explicit approval before anything can be used, in theory, this could fail before it even gets off the ground if it's true that the vast majority of these actors want nothing to do with this. So they won't give their consent, nothing will happen, and Replica Studios will have no voices to work with.
It requires explicit actor consent for how their digital replicas can be used and requires studios to notify the union if considering using fully synthesized actors, giving the union a chance to bargain for human actors to be cast instead. So it gives them the opportunity to bargain. That doesn't necessarily mean that the studio has to go with human actors.
Yeah, right. They're like, oh, wait. So I could spend almost nothing on AI or I could spend thousands of dollars on voice actors. Let's negotiate.
Yeah, which one will I choose? I don't know.
It does say that all they need to do is allow them to make a bid, essentially.
Right.
Not that they have to take it. Like we've been talking about all episode and many times over the past year, AI is coming whether we like it or not. So if it's inevitable, you may as well find a way to make money off of it yourself, to find a way to protect yourself in the age of AI moving forward, but...
Protect yourself before you wreck yourself? Next up from IGN, the MSI Claw officially announced. New handheld gaming PC will compete with Steam Deck.
It's the Claw!
The Claw!
You're afraid of the Claw.
After a tease on Instagram last week, MSI has officially announced Claw. The Claw! Gadget! A portable gaming PC looking to join a growing market that includes the Steam Deck and many others. As part of its CES 2024 announcements, MSI shared more info than just the name and images of the Claw. An Intel Meteor Lake processor powers this new handheld gaming PC, which is an interesting choice given most handheld gaming PCs on the market, like the aforementioned Steam Deck, Asus ROG Ally, and Lenovo Legion Go, all use AMD CPUs in its devices. Another interesting thing to note is that the MSI Claw features a 7-inch FHD IPS display with a 120Hz refresh, making it the same length as the Asus ROG Ally display.
It's not about the length?
No, it's never about that. Just how you use it.
I got to be honest with you. This is about girth.
Unironically, the Claw looks similar to the Asus ROG Ally, with a few differences aside from the obvious difference in color variant. Most notably, the MSI Claw's A, B, X, and Y buttons are blue. Additional specs on the MSI Claw include 16 gigabytes of LPDDR5 RAM and Intel Arc integrated graphics, and it weighs 675 grams, roughly 1.5 pounds, making it heavier than the Asus ROG Ally, Lenovo Legion Go, and both Steam Deck models. How many times are we going to say Asus ROG Ally in this damn article? Storage configuration can go up to 1 terabyte of SSD and includes a micro SD card slot for an additional storage option. Like other handheld gaming PCs looking to stand out, MSI's big selling point for the MSI Claw is its battery performance. Equipped with a 53 watts per hour battery, MSI touts the Claw can deliver users an impressive 2-hour battery life under full workload conditions. Ooh. Did someone say Sega Nomad?
No, I was thinking Game Gear.
I was thinking Game Gear all over this.
MSI is the latest company to join in on an emerging market of handheld gaming PCs. While companies most notably Most notably Aneo have been making handhelds of this type for quite a while, the market heated up when Valve released the Steam Deck nearly 2 years ago. MSI Claw is targeting a first half of 2024 release window.
I am hugely disappointed that they didn't mention how good or bad the fumes smell that come out of the back.
Well, you can't really know that until it releases.
I base all of my purchases of handheld gaming equipment based off of the vent smell. So I need to know.
The pre-release teardown reviews that go up on YouTube, they should include that as a metric now to measure. How do the steam vent fumes smell?
It's like a cheeseburger mixed with liver and onions.
Oh, gross. Do you remember the old robots? I know I had a couple back in the 80s that had that mechanical, that they would shoot smoke out of their like weapons.
I don't remember this.
Okay. There is a specific smell that I will always attribute to that specific toy. And I wonder if that's kind of like the same smell that comes out of the Steam Deck.
Simulated smoke.
Unfiltered. Menthol.
I wonder if we're getting into like a second golden age of handheld gaming devices. And so if they're going to start coming up with more like edgy names to be sure they get some attention when they release, like the Claw or the, just think of an energy drink name and make it a name of a handheld.
Bang!
Monster.
Go further, like pig vomit. It's got to be edgy.
Placenta blood.
Oh, I got that Diablo one that runs on blood.
Yo, yes.
There you go. We need a handheld that runs on blood.
And you could keep it going beyond 2 hours. Just put an IV in your skin.
Self-powered. But one thing that's never mentioned here and will be the crucial point is this, the price.
Yes.
What's the price point? How does it compare to a Steam Deck? Because let's be honest, that's why Nintendo is still killing the handheld market, is because you can get a Switch Lite for $200, have access to the entire Nintendo first party library, and you're good to go.
And you don't have to buy 80% of the games that are on Steam that nobody plays.
Right.
No, just 80% of the games on the eShop that nobody plays.
Touché. All right, next up from VentureBeat, AromaJoin unveils scent-based XR devices at CES 2024. AromaJoin has unveiled its secret scent-based devices, the Aroma Shooter Wearable and Aroma Speaker 60. Yes, that's, there's so many.
The Shooter Wearable. Thwip, 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 thwip.
For extended reality experiences, these scent-emitting devices promise to bring more immersion to XR experiences by synchronously releasing scents corresponding to virtual scenarios, engaging users' olfactory senses. Powered by Kyoto-based AromaJoin. I'm struggling with this name. AromaJoin. Patented aroma shooter technology, the device offers seamless scent switching capabilities without any residual effect. The Aroma Shooter Wearable is a neck-worn device specifically designed for use with XR content, enhancing the sensory experience. Meanwhile, the Aroma Speaker 60 has a library of 60 basic scents, enabling the expression of a wide range of aromas. The device are compatible with PCs, smartphones, virtual reality, and augmented reality, as well as more devices via Bluetooth connectivity. These devices aim to elevate the immersion levels in virtual environments. AromaJoin aims to bridge the gap between the digital and physical worlds by expanding the scent collection, which currently includes hundreds of scents from chocolate to orange to shampoo, to enrich virtual experiences further. The Aroma Shooter device technology operates akin to ink cartridges and print, utilizing scent cartridges and releasing scents by suctioning ambient air through the specialty designed orifices. These devices feature quick scent switching capabilities without scent mixing, ensuring a clean, seamless experience for users.
He lost it at sucking orifices.
So when I want to play the Shawshank Redemption VR game.
Why would you want to play that?
And if I have to crawl through 500 football yards of the fouling, smelling I can have that, all that stuff in there in my scent releasing, it just to have that experience, just to be Andy, to come out on the other side.
Well, my first thought was something perhaps a little more common in video games. Is like, let's say you're playing a zombie game. Do you really want to smell rotting corpse?
Rotting flesh? Oh, God.
I'm sure that's some people might be.
With the adult games that they have at VR, what? Like, oh, that's a nice smelling lube. What?
Pina colada.
You know, this reminds me of like Shark Tank or Dragon's Den, where people go in, they're like, we have the newest product that's available for gaming. It's going to be scent-based wearable technology, and we're going to call it the Shooter Wearable. And all of the sharks or dragons are like,
nobody wants that.
Well, okay, let's look at the other side of it, though. Scent is the five senses, is the one that's most tied to deep core memories. Okay. Fair. So like Donnie, you were saying just a few minutes ago, like the one toy from the 80s, you will forever remember that smell. And if you were to smell it again, it would take you right back there.
Right.
So in theory, Scent has the capability to vastly enhance a gaming experience.
So didn't they do this in the 1960s with like theaters? It was like smell-o-vision.
Yes.
Right.
And that didn't take off. You know, that wasn't something that was widely popular. But I do remember people talking about like the future of TV eventually will be that it'll also have scent to it. So we're finally at that point. It's gotten to that age where we can engage all of your senses available to you, and scent is the next one.
Yeah. But I mean, it makes sense in a lot of ways.
It makes sense.
Like, let's say you're playing Horizon Zero Dawn and you're walking through a forest and you smell the lovely trees and oh, it's so great. But then let's think about how many games insist on including a sewer level.
Or somebody farting. If I'm in a game, in a VR game, and somebody blasts a fart, I don't want to smell it.
How many VR games do you play where people are farting?
No, but if there's like the game of Dead at Night, maybe Jimmy's walking by and he farts and gives himself
dusting
away.
The room.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh God, I gotta hide in this bathroom. Oh God, it's bad.
Well, it would give you a way to track him.
Oh God, no, thank you.
Just think of like Abe's Odyssey, where you can get him to fart, and he goes.
Anna.
All right, before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. The segment is proudly sponsored by A Gamer Looks at 40 podcast. The show explores the history of video games through the stories and experiences of the everyday people who lived it. The podcast is currently on hiatus, but there are over 90 episodes in the backlog ready to be explored. This week, Bill recommends episode 4, Mario Memories and Recollections Part 1, where Blue and other guests share what makes Mario special to them. This week's question is, which Mario game deserves a remake or remaster or modern hardware? Let Bill know your answer by sending him a tweet at @agamerlooksat4040 on Twitter. I have an answer.
Okay.
You should let Bill know.
So technically not a Mario game, but he's in it.
Okay.
Donkey Kong?
Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Do you really want that remastered?
You know what? I would like to experience Mike Tyson's Punch-Out for the first time again. And maybe it'll be fun. I mean, Wii Punch-Out was fun. Super Punch-Out was great for the Super Nintendo. There hasn't been a Punch-Out game in a long time. Let's bring it back.
I would like to see a Donkey Kong remake. Like maybe something with 3D.
The original Donkey Kong?
The original Donkey Kong.
Make it like the movie Pixels?
Yeah, like Donkey Kong in VR.
Yeah, there you go. Run and
I
jump.
I would definitely do that.
No, you wouldn't.
Get
you'd
sick.
Be sick.
I'd get sick. Yeah.
I think we should get a remake or a remaster of the Game Boy Mario titles, Super Mario Land and Super Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins.
Absolutely.
I think we need a remake in the style of like Link's Awakening.
Yes.
I think that would be killer.
Blue comes with the serious one again.
Am I the only one who prepares?
All right, fellow kids, grab your favorite layered outfit, your Motorola Razr phone, your brand new Gmail account, and make sure your MySpace page has some cool tunes on it for your visitors. Because where we're going, you're going to need them. This is the Retro Rewind for January 2004. Let's take a look at some of the top Billboard songs and their artists for this month. We have Outkast coming in with number one with Hey Ya. Yeah,
all right.
God.
Don't want to meet your daddy, just want you in my caddy. Outkast with The Way You Move.
I like the way. Sorry. Well, I won't sing after every single one of them.
It's perfectly fine. I'm actually waiting for you to do that. I was going to hit you with the horn. Alicia Keys, You Don't Know My Name. I don't think I know that song.
Yeah, I don't either.
Twista featuring Kanye West and Jamie Foxx, Slow Jams. Kylie's with Milkshake. And it does bring all the boys to the yard. Beyonce with Me, Myself, and I. Usher featuring Lil Jon and Ludacris.
Usher.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the window.
That's a different song.
I know.
Nickelback with Someday.
Ooh.
Someday I will. Is it time to let go of all the Nickelback hate?
No.
Okay. Baby Bash featuring Frankie J with Suga Suga. I guess that's how you pronounce that. And No Doubt, It's My Life. Hot at the theaters this month, Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. Cheaper by the Dozen. Along Came Polly. Good movie. Gold really? Mountain. You never have you seen Along Came Polly?
It's Jennifer Aniston, right?
Yeah. And
I hated that movie.
What?
Donnie's other favorite movie is Steel Magnolias.
Something's Gotta Give. The Butterfly Effect, which is a really effed up movie.
Mm-hmm.
Paycheck. The Last Samurai. And Mona Lisa Smile.
I watched The Last Samurai today.
What? Why?
Because I was watching a bunch of Sengoku Jidai content on YouTube and I was bored. So I turned on The Last Samurai to see how incongruent it was with the actual samurai stuff.
That's the nerdiest thing I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's not the nerdiest thing you've ever heard.
That's real up there, though.
In the news, after hosting the show for over 30 years, Casey Kasem gives up the hosting duties of America's Top 40 to Ryan Seacrest.
The end of an era and a downgrade, if I'm being honest.
You know that Casey Kasem was the original Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Yes, I do.
Like, totally Scoob.
And Ryan Seacrest did important things, too.
Right.
Who is he?
Panthers kicker John Casey ties NFL playoff record with 5 field goals to lead Carolina to a 29-10 win over Dallas Cowboys in the wild card round of the playoffs in Charlotte, North Carolina. Yes, Cowboys, you guys still suck.
I was getting ready to make a similar joke, but I didn't mean to.
How about them Cowboys?
We them boys.
Spirit, a NASA Mars rover, lands successfully on Mars at 0435 UTC. A whale explodes in the town of Tainan, Taiwan. A buildup of gas in the decomposing sperm whale is suspected of causing the explosion.
So it was already dead. I was like, what?
Or he just had too much food at the buffet.
Say, swallowed like a sea mine.
Ooh. And my doom, the most destructive computer worm so far, first sighted on computers in North America, goes on to cause $38 billion in damages. And let's just hope you're not the person in the office that opened up that attachment.
Well, hopefully they destroyed all the hard drives, so they'll never trace it back to you. Right.
Just you see somebody instantly pour like water all over their computer, like, ah.
Oops, spilled it. Oh, no.
Yep. Oh, my God. Let's take a look at some of the articles from the readers this month. I recently read in your magazine about Castlevania Lament of Innocence for the PS2. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the Castlevania series, except for a few minor exceptions, a Nintendo name? Are the creators at least planning to make it for the GameCube? I mean, with all of the Castlevania games that have come out for the Game Boy Advance, you'd think they'd finally make one for the Cube. Please respond. Many of my friends and I are confused about the subject. Well, Sean, Castlevania's first Nintendo appearance was in 1987 on the NES, and the series has shown up on the SNES, N64, Game Boy, and Game Boy Advance, but it's actually the property of Konami. If you didn't know that by now, Sean May. The name started with that first NES game, but hero Simon Belmont actually made his debut in the MSX2 home computer game Vampire Killer. I did not know this.
There you go, Ryan. We need a Gaming History 101 on Vampire Killer.
I'm on it.
The Castlevania series has since shown up on the Genesis, PlayStation, PC Engine, PC, and in the arcade too. Track down the 1988 coin-op Haunted Castle. The Castlevania name is missing, but you'll recognize the gameplay, the whip, and those accursed bats. So while the franchise has strong ties to Nintendo platforms, it looks like Konami will let the Belmonts go a-wandering wherever they find evil.
He just got actuallyed.
Actually.
He did.
I loved it.
Next up, okay, once and for all, is Ryu pronounced Ryu or Ryu? Asks AJ Kirsch from Chico, California. It's Ryu with an accent on the second syllable, though you should try to say it as one syllable. Ryu.
Ryu.
It's not Ryu and it's not Ryu, but nobody's really going to blame you for saying it wrong because it's not a common name in America. Anyway, he fights a guy named Sagat. Sagat, who is not to be confused with the star of Full House. Bob
said. I don't know if anybody ever confused that.
Well, they both have the same physique, you know. Next up in video game news, last February, BMX star David Mira filed a lawsuit against Acclaim Entertainment seeking $21 million in damages and an injunction to keep the publisher from using Mira's name to promote BMX XXX. It seems now that Acclaim and Mira have amicably resolved their differences with no monetary or other damages involved in the settlement. We are pleased to have amicably resolved this matter with Dave and anxiously look forward to resuming our successful working partnership, said Rod Cousins, Acclaim's CEO.
I wonder if he was demanding a few more X's on the name. BMXXXXX.
Because triple X is not hardcore enough.
That's been done before. That's old news.
We have to go above and beyond. Acclaim says it has already begun development on a new Dave Mira BMX video game product, which probably helped to resolve the dispute. So your game isn't doing well. Let's make another one.
Somebody wrote a check.
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, Activision finds itself facing a fresh new lawsuit from novelist Robert Kraze, author of such books as Free Fall and L.A. Requiem, who claims that the company's true crime Streets of L.A. is a ripoff of his own work. Kraze says that true crime's hero Nick Kang is too close to his own Elvis Cole. At press time, the author was seeking an injunction preventing the release of the game, monetary damages, and the destruction of all infringing works. Activision had no plans to delay the game's release. And finally, the University of Wisconsin has filed a suit against Sony and the PS2 chipmaker Toshiba, claiming that the PS2 infringes on patents held by the school. Specifically, the suit alleges that the machine's core chip, the Emotion Engine, was produced with a fabrication technique that the university owns. The suit seeks an injunction payment and other damages. And I would like to go back and look to see how those two lawsuits played out.
I think we can probably guess.
A check was written?
Perhaps a check was written and made it go away. But I mean, obviously, all infringing acts of that game weren't destroyed because we know it.
Exactly. Let's take a look at the top 10 games that sound dirty that aren't. First up is the Nintendo 64 Double D. The Ooze. Bump and Jump.
Ain't nothing wrong with the little bump and jump.
Bump and jump. Final Blow. Mr. Driller.
Final Blow is you're about to break up and you go, whoa.
Worm Womper. Irritating Stick.
What?
Grabbed by the Ghoulies.
Oh.
Monster in My Pocket. And Wild Woody. Hot at Blockbuster this month was Conflict Desert Storm 2 for the PS2 and Xbox, Madden 2004 for the PS2, Jack 2 for the PS2, NBA Live 2004 for the PS2, Simpsons Hit and Run for the PS2, Backyard Wrestling for the, you guessed it, Soul Calibur 2 for, well, Enter the Matrix for, and Kirby Air Ride for the GameCube.
GameCube.
Right? Who the hell's renting games for the GameCube? Notable games released this month are Pokemon Fire Red and Leaf Green for the Game Boy Advance, Auto Modalesta for the Xbox, Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 2 for the PS2 and Xbox, Conflict Desert Storm 2 for the GameCube, FIFA Soccer 2004 for the Nokia N-Gage.
Oh, Jesus.
That was a hot ticket item at Blockbuster.
Absolutely. Freestyle Street Soccer for the Xbox, Mafia 2 for the PS2, NFL Street for the PS2, GameCube, and Xbox, Sega GT Online for Xbox, Sonic Battle for the Game Boy Advance, and Star Trek Shattered Universe for the PS2. Banner month for game releases.
I love all of these games.
Prove it. All right, kids, I gotta go. Ashley Simpson is hosting SNL tonight. Man, that is one artist who would never lip sync during a performance. I can't wait.
There's a throwback.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to episode 105 of Gamers Week Podcast. And a big thank you to Retro Game Club Podcast, Love Retro BTW, and A Gamer Looks at 40 Podcast for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creators-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. And of course, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. Finally, since you made it all the way to the end of the episode, please leave us a rating or a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice.
And we're now on YouTube.
That's right.
So Donnie painstakingly has gone back to our previous episodes and started uploading them to YouTube. So look at us. We're like expanding.
Mm. Right. We're finally on YouTube. We are at the cutting edge of technology here.
And soon we'll be on MySpace.
We should make a MySpace account as a joke.
And the songs we'll put on our profile will be all Peter Griffin covers.
Yes. Yes. All right. We're starting a MySpace page.
Yep. We're doing it. Oh God, and we're gonna say it in our wrap up every week. Visit us on MySpace.
Yes.
We're gonna be single handedly responsible for bringing back the popularity of MySpace.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
See y'all on MySpace.
To live is to suffer. To hope is to prolong the suffering.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.